Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Okay, well, welcome back. And it is now or never. And tomorrow we're going to do our History of Christmas episode. So make sure you tune in. And we're really not trying to kick Santa Claus here. But what we want to do is we want to help you understand that manipulation is, it's not necessarily a patent that America has. But America has become one of the best innovators of manipulation. And I just say that because we didn't go through a communist revolution, but we sure had heavy duty manipulation in America, you know, once we had our independence and so forth. And so I hope you tune in. I know you'll enjoy this. We're also reminding you next week we will be covering how to set effective goals for New Year's. So what we'll probably do is we'll probably just cover that on Friday. Nine times out of ten, it takes me 2 days to do it. But we'll see if I can do it in 1 day, which would be great. But I typically go through a lot of the nuts and bolts regarding how to set effective goals. And the most important part of setting effective goals is the mechanism going throughout the year of holding yourself accountable. It's kind of like creating a resource-loaded schedule where you look at, you know, where are you at this point in time based on those goals, you know, and your sub-goals and those types of things? Are you on schedule or not? Because if you're not reviewing yourself, then what's the point? Anyway, as I sometimes forget, but it's not any less of an obligatory, this show is also sponsored by RepublicReview.org, and you're listening to the only show that gives you the academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions. So with that, we were talking about making all elections local and how to do this. You got to understand that Article 4, Section 4 requires that all states be Republican in form. So if you're choosing your representatives in your government, then allowing a foreigner to influence by using money, endorsements, or what have you, like Trump, or literally like the Chinese Communist Party, or Soros spending money in your election area, that has to be stopped. All money must be rooted and originated from within that election area. So what is the election area? The election area is the boundary of that election. A lot of times it's the county. Sometimes it's your city, depending on the area of the election. In some cases, it's a legislative district. Now, those legislative districts need to be challenged because it's problematic right now because legislative districts go outside of counties. In other words, what they do is they force your representation in your legislative district to smear across multiple counties. In California, it's 9 counties and growing. I mean, seriously, folks, how is it you get representation? And if you look at those counties in California, or even in Washington, you will find some very distinctly disparate interests between these counties. In other words, one county has, you know, mining and those types of operations as a key focus, timber in others, agriculture in others. How is it that those three counties or those three county types or terrain types are being properly represented by one person? So they understand that all interests aren't the same from one county to the next to the next to the next. And they understood that those interests needed representation. It wasn't based on how many heads there were. Now, yeah, you create so many seats for your state government, and then you divvy those up by basic population, but each county is guaranteed at least one representative. So anyway, so you look at the physical or the geographical area that encompasses the boundaries of the election, and anybody from outside that area that is stepping into that very specific election, in other words, the mayor, if it's somebody within the county, like the sheriff, if the sheriff is endorsing somebody in that, and the sheriff does not live in that city, then he should not be able to endorse who he would support. Now, if the sheriff or anybody in America basically advocated that all people took a good, accurate test on the Constitution for that office, and then based on that office would recommend that you vote for the person that has the highest score, then you now have a person that's not playing partisan politics. You actually have a person that's playing constitutional politics and helping people understand the importance of the Constitution. This is what I do. This is very specifically what we do here with Reclaiming the Republic. We demand that people start taking these tests. There's no point to me having one person in a race or in a particular, you know, like the U.S. Senate or what have you. We've done tests. We've created tests before, but there's no point in us doing that if we don't have the pressure to get at least demand that everybody do this, which means that we need to get the parties. We need you, the people, to start demanding this. And this is why these have to be petitions. You need to actually start stipulating to your Secretary of State that the criteria for a person to be on the ballot, they must take at a minute, passing is another thing, but they must take that test. If they don't take the test, then next to their name, it basically says did not test. That way everybody can find out who tested and who didn't. And then they can go to the scores. But if it's on the ballot, those people who chose not to take the test will have an indication next to their name that says this candidate did not take the test. That way it's very easy for folks to say, yeah, I want to vote for the person that's trying to sidestep the reality and the responsibility of supporting the Constitution. Wow, that sounds like a really good person to vote for, right? That's who I want to vote for. Or the same person would say, you know, where does this person get off getting their name on the ballot and refusing to actually take a test to prove whether they understand the Constitution or not when they're legally bound to support it? Folks, the Constitution clearly states that we're not supposed to have religious tests. It does not state anywhere that we cannot demand that they at least understand the Constitution and take tests for that. So if you start understanding the importance of vetting, do not buy into these conservative tests. A conservative test is not a constitutional test, and they actually walk a thin line between a religious test and not. And when we look at, you know, the Senate, U.S. Senate confirmation of a Supreme Court justice and how they ask questions regarding the religious positions on things. Well, you know, how can you not be open and, you know, objective regarding abortion if you're Catholic or if you're Christian? Those right there are religious tests. And we need to start slapping people down who apply them. And so this is why yours truly, and I try to recommend everybody, folks, you need to stop allowing ourselves to be divided over religion. We need to divide ourselves over what you are doing, over the person's behavior. Is that person supporting liberty? You know, if 99% of what they're doing, they may make some mistakes, but that's okay. We're supposed to forgive each other. But if that person is demanding subjugation and compulsion and communism, then that person is an enemy to our Constitution, period. They are in a position where they stand in jeopardy to lose their rights as a citizen and be deported, because all citizens are legally bound to support that Constitution. not their communist ideology. So as we kind of go through, now you understand the physical area of making all elections local. Now what we do is we start identifying where the funding comes from, because we need to make sure that if it is a city race, if it is for the city mayor, city council, what have you, then the election area is the area where the must prove that the funding came from. Now, it's one thing if somebody works for, you know, a big company or what have you, which may not even be within, but that's their personal income. So if a person gets, regardless of how they make their income, unless it's a business, we'll get into businesses, but if it comes out of their personal income, then that money can be basically applied to any election in their election areas. Now, remember, we have multiple election areas. Sometimes we have a statewide race, right? Unfortunately, we still have a direct election for our governors, which means that, you know, everybody that made money in that state, personal income in that state, can donate money. However, businesses, if a business is going to donate that any money, they have to prove that their profits came from, or the money that they used came from, profits that were made within that state. So we'll get into this concept of businesses and, you know, like an Amazon business or what have you, where you may be a reseller on different businesses out there and how you can make money and so forth. We'll get into that when we come back, because this is where we can really lock down what kind of money gets involved in your elections.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review, as well as my description of the republic review model, on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so when we're looking at where money comes from, let's just say you have somebody that is a reseller on Amazon. And that's how they make, you know, I've seen people that make a lot of money on eBay as well. They, you know, they basically go out and find junk and they sell it out on eBay. And so the question is, if that's their business, even if it's personal income or what have you, but they actually have a business doing this, and technically they should be making, this should be business because it's commerce activity. even though a lot of people hide their personal income in doing those types of things, technically you should be registered with the state and operating a business of being a reseller on Amazon, eBay, or what have you. So technically, if you know somebody that is doing this and they're contributing money into races and just calling it all personal income, that's not the same thing, because a commerce, the money that comes in from out of state, because this is how they can start gaming it, because let's just say they're literally selling junk and they're selling, you know, a $5 piece for $20,000. This is how they can bypass the ability of injecting that kind of money into your election. So, in other words, I wouldn't put it past a Democrat or a progressive to actually do something like this. So you need to understand why it's kind of important when we start segregating and, you know, how people are making a living. If they're, even if they're a sole proprietor, it is still a business. You're not an employee making money and compensation. You're self-employed? No, not really. A self-employed person is somebody that actually provides labor or service or that type of thing. But when you're reselling stuff, that is a business. And so this is how you protect yourself, or I should say you protect your elections from creating little thin barriers so that Soros can funnel money into these elections. The money has to be proved that it came from within the election area. So if somebody is actually a self-employed person where they go off and they do plumbing work or they go off and do handyman work, you know, then that's a self-employed person and that's not a business. So you may travel in and out of the area, but it is a self-employed business. So that's personal income, right? Because it's the same thing as a person working for, you know, let's say they're a executive that, you know, travels around and they work out of their home. And the business doesn't even exist within the state itself. So you basically telecommute, you fly out a lot and so forth. But nevertheless, that money that you're making, that is personal income because you're an employee. It's not you as a business. Now, if it is you as a business, let's say it's Walmart. Let's say you are a manager for Walmart or you're an executive for Walmart. Now, Walmart, that means you're an employee. However, if you are a Walmart store, because the Walmart stores are actually some of these businesses, and I'll give you a good case in point, a Vista and or a power company and or a utility and or those types of businesses, they may be local, but they actually traverse multiple counties. So a Vista, if they're going to get into a legislative district race, a county commissioner race, or what have you, because they do this a lot. And what is a Vista? It is a public utility. It's an electrical company that up in the Pacific Northwest. And right next to them is another small company called Inland Power. You have very similar types of businesses. And they typically love getting involved in electing and helping people that will be favorable to their bottom line. Not favorable to you, the citizen, getting the best business or getting the best product and service that your taxes can pay for. What they're doing is they're injecting, and I saw $50,000 that came into these county commissioner races. And the problem is the majority of that money didn't come from within that election area. In other words, they didn't prove that that money came out of that election area. It was out of their overall profits. So Walmart, let's just say Walmart, you know, you have four Walmarts in your state. And they can throw a lot of money into your elections throughout the state. Well, hold on here. No, they can't. They can only provide election support within the election areas where they exist. So if they're not in your county, then they can't give any money to any county races or any city races or any type of races of a legislative district that they do not exist in. Why is this? Because bottom line, businesses do have a, I'll say, a dog in the fight of representation, but they should not be able to sway or influence representation where they don't reside. It's the same thing with Soros. Soros may, you know, deserve, if he becomes a U.S. citizen and he doesn't go straight to jail, but an evil person like that, if they are a U.S. citizen and we don't have them in jail yet, the only person that they should be able to influence as far as representation would be their own. This is how we take back our government, by understanding a Republican form of government and living to it to a T. This is how we actually change the influences of our election and the outcome of our election, because money actually does swing elections one way or the other. Because if all of a sudden it becomes a financial challenge overall within your county for all of these different races, then everybody has the same footing. Nobody can come in and give somebody an inordinate advantage. This is how they do it, and how they basically pervert races by actually filtering bad money into races to help elevate a bad player to get into office. This is why we are riddled with all of these, or I should say, we're peppered and we're polluted with all these rhinos in most all of these red states. The way we get rid of it is demanding all elections be local, and we have very specific petitions on this on the Bill of Rights for the 21st century, or for the Bill of Rights for 2022. We've got it all right here of the types of petitions that we need to get you to get in support of. This way, when we do this, we'll actually have what we'll call pressure, political pressure on your local politicians in getting and demanding that they actually start securing your elections. Because once you start looking at this and you start going through this, this is a couple of pages here. So you need to go through this. I'm not going to read this, but this even talks about measures, you know, initiatives, those types of things. Now, you've heard me criticize those, but even if you have those, they need to be constrained by those who are within the area of election. Everything needs to be placed into the area of election. Now, the one last thing I want to point out on this is, in our representative form of government, who has access to your representatives? The criteria must be only those constituents. And if you are a constituent, you live in the area, you cannot be a lobbyist unless you are a lobbyist for the people who live in the area. In other words, you can create a special focus group or a lobbyist type of group that's focused on, you know, kind of improving something in the legislative district or what have you. But you cannot influence anybody else. You have to be operating within that election area, and your influence only covers for those people who are actually supporting you. So in other words, if you only have a single funder and you're a lobbyist, it doesn't matter how much money you have, you only have the representation of two people. This is why we tell you that you need to get your representatives, your county representatives, to go up to your legislative district and poke them in the eye, because that means they represent everybody in that county, and they should be your lobbyists. You shouldn't leave these things to corporations who are basically only serving themselves when they step into the office of your legislator, whether that be at the county level or at the state level. They're only serving themselves. They're actually creating direct conflicts with what they're to do regarding you and your representation. So to shut down and lock these doors, to close these doors and lock them from lobbyists being able to walk in, they need to prove their residency and what they represent. If they represent any organization, they have to identify that. And if that organization is not funded and operated within that legislative district or within the geographical area of who that person represents, then they have no business being in that room. I don't care if they live in that county. They can be in that county as an individual citizen, but they cannot represent a company. They cannot represent an interest. And I'll give you a good case in point, the Convention of States or any of these lobbyist organizations. They don't operate and exist in every county. They don't operate and exist in every election area group. And so we can actually start demanding that we push back and say, look, you don't have any right of representation here. You as a citizen do, but you're bringing in money that should not have any play here. That money needs to get out of here. This actually kills money coming from the trees of politics. As we look at how money starts getting thrown around, if we can stop the flow of money from perverting our politics, then we can actually start purifying our government again and cleansing it, because it is money that becomes the root of corruption. Anyway, we will be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL. Or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath, even though we're not required to take it, because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416.
Okay, so getting into this, because this is all based on republicanism, right? American republicanism. So getting into this next little focus on our representation, let's take this turn on voting in a Republican form of government. Now, let's say you are a business, and let's say, because businesses do have rights of protection, especially local businesses. So if you actually have a local business, not an interstate business, not a large business, but you have a small local business needs to be able to protect itself from predatory businesses and or predatory activists, because activists love shutting down businesses and increasing entitlements and so forth. So let's say you operate a business in a neighboring county or in a neighboring area of election, and you typically don't have any ability to influence property taxes for your business because it's in a different county than you reside. You should be able to vote on those things where you have a dog or you have a right of representation. If you're a business owner, you have a right of representation to be able to vote on that one particular. Now, you can't vote on all the rest of the representation, but you can defend your property from being overran by a democracy. The only people that should be able to vote in a property tax bill, a levy, are the property owners, those people who own or are paying for the deed that, you know, so in other words, they have a mortgage or what have you. If you are a renter, then you should not be able to vote on a property tax. Folks, this is how they have basically implemented democracy in getting this entitlement state to grow, because we have actually seen the decrease in property ownership where the renters then want to actually take your money to fund things for them. Hold on here. That's not how it's supposed to work. I mean, when you own stock in Chevrolet, does that mean you can start voting in the governance of Ford and Chrysler? No. When I say Chevrolet, I mean GM. So bottom line, you're protected by the interest that you have, but you don't have a right to be able to extend your interest in somewhere that you don't have stake in, where you don't have a dog in that fight. You don't deserve the representation. If we started thinking in the context of representation and republicanism, then this actually changes how we look at our elections, how we look at our right of voting, and so forth. We're not talking about poll taxes. We're just basically stating you have a right to vote. If you're a property owner, there's going to be property taxes, then you have the right to vote in that. But if you don't own property, you should not be able to vote on whether those people pay a tax or not. Why don't we just let China vote on what we're going to do? It's the same thing. Allowing somebody that has no legal right to influence something, and we allow it to happen. Oh, well, we're a democracy. No, we're not a democracy. More people are starting to get this, but they complain about the words, but they don't understand the subtext underneath what those words mean. This is what we're doing here, and this is why we go through this. Now, as we've gone through, and this was all basically under the bigger title, a Republican form of government. And so if you go through this section, we have petitions. And by the time you get to the bottom of this section, you'll find that these petitions go, let me see, how far do we go here? We go through to the 20th petition. So the first section was enforcing the Constitution, where I think in these petitions we had two. So in other words, we have 18 petitions that cover, and that's only a tip of the iceberg, folks. 18 petitions that cover republicanism and American republicanism and enforcing these types of concepts in our elections and so forth. So technically, there's a lot of room to actually have more than just these 18. If you start understanding how we need to start demanding these fundamental principles be restored, that we have access to doing what we should have a right to do, then you'll actually start seeing things change. Now, this next section has a lot of importance. And under a Republican form of government, we were already kind of talking about fundamental property rights. Let me back up and say one of the things that Madison basically told us is he says that it can be said that a person has a right in their property. More importantly, it can also be said that a person has property in their rights. So in other words, if you have a right, that doesn't necessarily mean that there's, you know, a deed to this right. It may be your religious expression. It doesn't mean that that's not your property. Your thoughts are your property. Your expressions are your property. You have a fundamental right to protect your property. And so when we look at, you know, how our property rights are being dictated by homeowners associations, these things violate the rights of a citizen in the United States. And so how in the heck did we get here? We were convinced that we could go into contracts that would actually subjugate us and basically enslave us under a body of rules and some governing that we would be constrained and our rights could be abridged. Imagine a homeowners association making it against the homeowners association's laws that you can't have a gun on your property. Now, I'm going to bet that there are homeowners associations that are already doing this, but that right there is a violation of your constitutional rights. It's the same thing as homeowners associations not allowing you to have a chicken coop on your property, not allowing you to be able to grow your own food on your property. I don't care how highfalutin the neighborhood is that you live in. If you want to do your share in feeding yourself and helping others by reducing, because let's look at the Wicker v. Filburn case real quick. The Wicker v. Filburn case basically boiled down to this. A farmer looking at the rising cost of food and feed for his cattle and his livestock realized that it would be cheaper for him to grow his own grain to feed his livestock instead of paying the inflated prices because taxes were now being inflicted on the grain. Now, just remember, the Constitution does not allow them to tax any products. But nevertheless, now that they are starting to tax this, this farmer basically says, well, I'm not going to buy grain anymore. I'm going to grow it. So as he started growing his grain, a tax assessor came by and said, hey, look, I notice you've got so many acres of this grain. And so we're going to tax you on the acreage of grain. Well, the farmer says, I'm not selling this grain. He goes, oh, well, that doesn't matter. And he goes, well, why do you say that? He goes, well, you're going to use this, right? And he goes, yeah. Well, the fact is that by you growing this grain, you've taken yourself out of the market of buying. So you have to pay us on the taxes that you would have paid had you bought this off of the market. So in other words, government is basically being so tyrannical that they came after this guy to say, you still have to pay the taxes even though you're not buying it because you've removed yourself and we have a right to your taxes. Can you understand this concept? This is where we are. Government believes they're entitled to a certain percentage of money out of your pocket. If you're going to, you know, have consume grain, you need to pay the taxes on it. Doesn't matter how you got it now. And so this concept of private property needs to really be embraced. Now, I've said this several times. I'm going to say it again right here, right now. In every vestige, in every building, in every office space of government, whether it be the chambers of your legislature, whether it be the office rooms of your county commissioners, you know, the meeting places of where your government and those legislators meet, on the walls, on every wall in that room, these two lines or this one line should basically be at the very top so everybody sees it and it is in bold, that the two objects of government is to protect life and private property. If we start teaching them that that's their responsibility, then we finally can actually lay the groundwork to basically remove their ability from taking our lives or our property by taxing us. In other words, it's one thing to tax people if they can pay it, but if all of a sudden you can't pay your taxes, then you should be waived. You should not be held accountable for something, and they can't take your property because their job is to protect it from being taken. The government that's protecting it can't be taken from you, or that just creates a paradox. Anyway, We're going into break. We'll be right back, and we will cover more of these details on property rights.
I've been on the radio for a couple of years, and for over a decade, I have been providing content to help patriots understand what has to be done if we're going to save our Constitution and our Republic. Not one academic has been able to refute my argument for Republic Review, and even most conservative entertainers will not support Republic Review due to self-interest reasons. If you have not read my bullet point descriptions and executive summaries, you need to so that you can understand what we all need to do. I am trying to give patriots the necessary knowledge to take back our Constitution and Republic. Go to reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can read my bullet points and view the Republic Review flowchart. You can even order my executive summaries, books, and other content to understand the simplicity of what we have to do. This way, you will know what, why, and how to support the reclaiming of our Republic. Again, please take a look at my content on reclaimingtherepublic.org so you can become a part of the solution. To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so there are many factors that really have been lost in our government regarding property and property rights. One of the most fundamental properties a person possesses is money. Now, in the old days, money was actually cash crops. In other words, your products, your tobacco, what you grew was your cash. And most people didn't carry cash. Most people didn't have gold in their pockets. We have moved our economy so much so that there is this magical thing in giving people pay for their labor and so forth when there's no crop to actually pay them other than cash, coins, gold, silver, and so forth. And so our monetary system has become so perverted that we're so out of line on what the cost of labor is and everything else. And, you know, this concept of supply and demand, I am telling you, there's been manipulations in supply and demand to actually facilitate where certain careers have gotten a lot more compensation than the other ones. I'll give you a great case in point. Doctors make a lot of money. I mean, when it comes down to their time and labor, they make more money because they save lives more than a lawyer makes. However, the persons that really save people's lives are the people, you know, once the doctors do their miracle work, the real life, you know, because some of that stuff can be done by a robot. Some of these surgeries can actually be done by robots. But the real balance of life is in the nursing. But the average nurse makes less than most of what we would call, you know, the common labor market, which a framer, a plumber, an electrician, and so forth. None of those folks, none of the products that the common labor market produces has a person's life hanging in the balance. You know, being able to get an IV started, being able to, you know, provide for quick and, you know, methodical responses to a person's reactions and so forth to where you could die. And understanding those things, you cannot tell me that a nurse or, you know, the RSN or BSRN, I should say, because they make these decisions. A nurse practitioner and a PA is basically, these are like elevated nurses. They're almost like doctors. But my point is that even the nurse itself, even the nurse makes those types of decisions where the framer doesn't make those kinds of decisions or the plumber. I mean, they're not saving lives almost on a daily basis. And to my point, when you compare the magnitude of salary and compensation, well, why is that? Oh, I'll tell you why. Because most nurses are women. And because when people, then the lawmakers look and they go, well, they're not the primary breadwinners. Well, hold on here. Does that mean we can diminish what they really do? My point is this, that when we start looking at what a person does, we need to alleviate who is doing it and understand the magnitude of that service. But here's the bigger question. Do we really want government to start dictating? Because the only reason why the manual labor is making as much money, obscene amount, I mean, look at your landscaper. A landscaper charges $100 an hour in our area. It's not uncommon to find somebody to say, yeah, we'll mow your lawn and so forth. And effectively, you're paying about, for some services, because it's just manual services, it's reasonable, maybe $65 an hour. That's more than twice of what a nurse would make, the average nurse would make in the area. So how is this even fathomable? A landscaper even makes more money. But when you start looking at, you know, what we have and what we're doing, the question is, why is it that we would allow these types of things? Well, we can't. I think it's a mistake to let state government dictate these things. It'd probably be a mistake to let your county, because every time you start creating floors and ceilings on pay, wages, rent, all of these types of things, it always gets messed up. The problem is that when all of a sudden wages are too inflated, it's like impossible to allow them to fall. You know, when all of a sudden there's a glut on tomatoes, the price of tomatoes surely fall. Where's the farmer's protection on that? We are way too protectionary when it comes, oh, well, we'll take increases, but we'll never take decreases. And the problem is, and I'll tell you this, you'll find it in the Constitution that the wages cannot be diminished for judges or what have you. And I have a problem with that. What happens if we've actually overinflated and overinflated? The cost of government can't come down? That's wrong. It's absolutely wrong. Because if it's a free market, if our economy is based on free market, and we have a big fall in wages, all wages need to be able to come down. And if the Constitution doesn't understand that, then we need to have a good debate and look at that and say, yeah, we need to be able to allow our government employees, our public servants, to be able to take a decrease, not just always increases. Now, it's one thing when we have this big, huge inflation, but what would happen if all of a sudden we had this monetary policy that deflated our currency? In other words, instead of printing more and more money, we actually started taking money out of circulation, where we started reducing the currency in circulation. That actually creates a shortage of currency, and it makes the value of the dollar go up. It basically brings down inflation and helps the value of the dollar go up. So I'm just trying to point out that these types of things, when it comes down to money, when it comes down to compensation, those types of things, that is property. Do not think otherwise. And so when we look at our property and money, money being the ultimate of private property, your wages being the ultimate of private property, then why is it that when the Constitution dictates that only gold and silver coin can be the currency of the United States, why is it we don't have gold and silver coin today? Because they were able to convince us, and they dragged us down this road, and now we're literally flapping on a dry, dusty road, trying to get into the water and trying to breathe in the water like we're a fish out of water, because we don't have the protections that the Constitution gave us over our currencies. Because no state, it's right there in the Constitution, no state can make the tender, legal tender for the payment of debt, anything other than gold and silver coin. That's right there in Article 1, Section 10. Now, what we need to do is we need to identify that money is the ultimate property. And so the concept is that government cannot go into cryptocurrency. Government cannot go into, you know, a cashless society or anything other than gold and silver coin. You know, this whole concept of this globalist cashless society concept, the Lord protected us from that. He must have known, because it was actually placed into the Constitution. A bank, a national bank, was not placed into the Constitution. They can't have a bank, but they can actually regulate the currency by regulating how much currency is in circulation. This is what helps regulate the value of the dollar, the value of our gold and coin currency. So when you start going through, and I invite you to actually start looking at this, we cover the topics here of how money is our private property. Then we go into this right of conscience being one of the most important, valuable rights that we have as citizens. That when we look at the right of conscience, this must be protected. That you should be able to actually say, I don't buy into government having me do this. And being able to draw that line, because we have a right, an individual right beyond our government. They say you have to take this for a passport. For you to travel, you have to be vaccinated. No, they can't do that. And so let's look at this backwards, right? The people that are vaccinated are supposedly those who are protected from the unvaccinated. Why is it that we're compelling and forcing them, the unvaccinated, to say, we're going to punish you, when we should be impervious to those that have been vaccinated? So why is it that they're getting away with punishing the unvaccinated? It makes no sense. Now, it's one thing for a country to say, we're not vaccinated, and so we don't want anybody coming in that is vaccinated because we believe the vaccinations cause a problem and spread the disease or what have you. And in a country that goes down a natural vaccinate, or I should say a natural immune system path. Interesting. Well, that's the right of the country and those people that live in that. If they allow people on their own to get vaccinated, but it's another thing to say, we will not allow you to be vaccinated because of the risk you would pose to other people. That's very interesting. But the fact of the matter is, government cannot pick and choose and mandate to you what you have to do and what you don't have to do. So we're wrapping up next week on personal property and private property and so forth. And we're going to be doing more of the strategy next week. And tomorrow we will do the manipulation of Christmas in America. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. God bless.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org.
www.takeactionpublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.